Selections from The Odyssey, written by Homer, translated by Robert Fitzgerald. Odysseus's Revenge. Now shrugging off his rags, the wiliest fighter of the islands leapt and stood on the broad door sill, his own bow in hand. He poured out at his feet a rain of arrows from the quiver and spoke to the crowd. "So much for that. Your clean-cut game is over. Now watch me hit a target that no man has hit before, if I can make this shot. Help me, Apollo." He drew to his fist the cruel head of an arrow for Antinous, just as the young man leaned to lift his beautiful drinking cup, embossed, two-handled, golden. The cup was in his fingers. The wine was even at his lips. And did he dream of death? How could he? In that revelry, amid his throng of friends, who would imagine a single foe, though a strong foe indeed, could dare to bring death's pain on him and darkness on his eyes? Odysseus's arrow hit him under the chin and punched up to the feathers through his throat. Backward and down he went, letting the wine cup fall from his shocked hand. Like pipes, his nostrils jetted crimson runnels, a river of mortal red, and one last kick upset his table, knocking the bread and meat to soak in dusty blood. Now as they craned to see their champion where he lay, the suitors jostled in uproar down the hall, everyone on his feet. Wildly they turned and scanned the walls and the long room for arms. But not a shield, not a good ashen spear was there for a man to take and throw. All they could do was yell in outrage at Odysseus. "Foul to shoot at a man! That was your last shot! Your own throat will be slit for this. Our finest lad is down. You killed the best on Ithaca. Buzzards will tear your eyes out." For they imagined as they wished that it was a wild shot, an unintended killing. Fools not to comprehend, they were already in the grip of death. But glaring under his brows, Odysseus answered, "You yellow dogs, you thought I'd never make it home from the land of Troy. You took my house to plunder. You dared bid for my wife while I was still alive. Contempt was all you had for the gods who rule wide heaven. Contempt for what men say of you hereafter. Your last hour has come. You die in blood." As they all took this in, sickly green fear pulled at their entrails, and their eyes flickered, looking for some hatch or hideaway from death. Eurymachus alone could speak. He said, "If you are Odysseus of Ithaca, come back. All that you say these men have done is true. Rash actions, many here, more in the countryside. But here he lies, the man who caused them all. Antinous was the ringleader. He whipped us on to do these things. He cared less for a marriage than for the power Cronion has denied him as king of Ithaca. For that, he tried to trap your son and would have killed him. He is dead now, and has his portion. Spare your own people. As for ourselves, we'll make restitution of wine and meat consumed, and add, each one, a tithe of 20 oxen, with gifts of bronze and gold to warm your heart. Meanwhile, we cannot blame you for your anger." Odysseus glowered under his black brows and said, "Not for the whole treasure of your fathers, all you enjoy, lands, flocks, or any gold put up by others, would I hold my hand. There will be killing till the score is paid. You forced yourselves upon this house. Fight your way out, or run for it. If you think you'll escape death, I doubt one man of you skins by." They felt their knees fail, and their hearts, but heard Eurymachus for the last time rallying them. "Friends," he said, "the man is implacable. Now that he's got his hands on bow and quiver, he'll shoot from the big doorstone there until he kills us to the last man. Fight, I say. Let's remember the joy of it. Swords out. Hold up your tables to deflect his arrows. After me, everyone. Rush him where he stands. If we can budge him from the door, if we can pass into the town, we'll call out men to chase him. This fellow with his bow will shoot no more." He drew his own sword as he spoke, a bronze sword of fine bronze, honed like a razor on either edge. Then, crying hoarse and loud, he hurled himself at Odysseus. But the kingly man let fly an arrow at that instant, and the quivering feathered butt sprang to the nipple of his breast as the barb stuck in his liver. The bright broadsword clanged down. He lurched, and fell aside, pitching across his table. His cup, his bread and meat were spilt and scattered far and wide, and his head slammed on the ground. Revulsion, anguish in his heart, with both feet kicking out, he downed his chair while the shrouding wave of mist closed on his eyes. Amphinomus now came running at Odysseus, broadsword naked in his hand. He thought to make the great soldier give way at the door, but with a spear throw from behind, Telemachus hit him between the shoulders, and the lance head drove clear through his chest. He left his feet and fell forward, thudding, forehead against the ground. Telemachus swerved around him, leaving the long dark spear planted in Amphinomus. If he paused to yank it out, someone might jump him from behind or cut him down with a sword. At the moment he bent over. So he ran from the tables to his father's side and halted, panting, saying, "Father, let me bring you a shield and spear, a pair of spears, a helmet. I can arm on the run myself. I'll give outfits to Eumaeus and this cowherd. Better to have equipment." Said Odysseus, "Run then, while I hold them off with arrows as long as the arrows last. When all are gone, if I'm alone, they can dislodge me." Quick, upon his father's word, Telemachus ran to the room where spears and armor lay. He caught up 4 light shields, 4 pairs of spears, 4 helms of war high-plumed with flowing manes, and ran back, loaded down, to his father's side. He was the first to pull a helmet on and slide his bare arm in a buckler strap. The servants armed themselves, and all 3 took their stand beside the master of battle. While he had arrows, he aimed and shot, and every shot brought down one of his huddling enemies. But when all barbs had flown from the bowman's fist, he leaned his bow in the bright entryway beside the door and armed. A 4-ply shield, hard on his shoulder, and a crested helm, horse-tailed, nodding stormy upon his head. Then took his tough and bronze-shod spears. Aided by Athena, Odysseus, Telemachus, Eumaeus, and other faithful herdsmen killed all the suitors. And Odysseus looked around him, narrow-eyed, for any others who had lain hidden while death's black fury passed. In blood and dust he saw all had fallen, many and many slain. Think of a catch that fishermen haul into Half Moon Bay in a fine meshed net from the whitecaps of the sea, how all are poured out on the sand in throes for the salt sea, twitching their cold lives away in Helios' very air. So lay the suitors heaped on one another. Penelope's Test. Penelope tests Odysseus to prove he really is her husband. Great-hearted Odysseus, home at last, was being bathed now by Eurynome, and rubbed with golden oil and clothed again in a fresh tunic and a cloak. Athena lent him beauty head to foot. She made him taller, and massive, too, with crisping hair and curls like petals of wild hyacinth, but all red golden. Think of gold infused on silver by a craftsman whose fine art Hephaestus taught him, or Athena, one whose work moves to delight. Just so, she lavished beauty over Odysseus's head and shoulders. He sat then in the same chair by the pillar, facing his silent wife, and said, "Strange woman, the immortals of Olympus made you hard, harder than any. Who else in the world would keep aloof as you do from her husband if he returned to her from years of trouble cast on his own land in the 20th year? Nurse, make up a bed for me to sleep on. Her heart is iron in her breast." Penelope spoke to Odysseus now. She said, "Strange man, if man you are, this is no pride on my part, nor scorn for you, not even wonder merely. I know so well how he appeared boarding that ship for Troy, but all the same, make up his bed for him, Eurystheus. Place it outside the bedchamber, my lord, built with his own hands. Pile the big bed with fleeces, rugs, and sheets of purest linen." With this, she tried him to the breaking point, and he turned on her in a flash, raging, "Woman, by heaven, you've stung me now. Who dared to move my bed? No builder had the skill for that, unless a god came down to turn the trick. No mortal in his best days could budge it with a crowbar. There is our pact and pledge, our secret sign, built into that bed, my handiwork, and no one else's."
old trunk of olive grew like a pillar on the building plot, and I laid out our bedroom around that tree, lined up the stone walls, built the walls and roof, gave it a doorway and smooth-fitting doors. Then I lopped off the silvery leaves and branches, hewed and shaped that stump from the roots up into a bedpost, drilled it, let it serve as model for the rest. I planed them all, inlaid them all with silver, gold, and ivory, and stretched in a bed between, a pliant web of oxide thongs dyed crimson. There's our sign. I know more. Could someone else's hand have sawn that trunk and dragged the frame away? Their secret, as she heard it told, her knees grew tremulous and weak. Her heart failed her. With eyes brimming tears, she ran to him, throwing her arms around his neck and kissed him, murmuring, "Do not rage at me, Odysseus. No one ever matched your caution. Think what difficulty the gods gave. They denied us life together in our prime and flowering years, kept us from crossing into age together. Forgive me. Don't be angry. I could not welcome you with love on sight. I armed myself long ago against the frauds of men, impostors who might come, and all those many whose underhanded ways bring evil on. But here and now, what sign could be so clear as this of our own bed? No other man has ever laid eyes on it, only my own slave, Arcturus, that my father sent me as a gift. She kept our door. You make my stiff heart know that I am yours." Now, from his breast into his eyes, the ache of longing mounted, and he wept at last. His dear wife, clear and faithful, in his arms, longed for as the sun-warmed earth is longed for by a swimmer, spent in rough water where his ship went down under Poseidon's blows, gale winds and tons of sea. Few men can keep alive through a big surf to crawl, clotted with brine, on kindly beaches, in joy, knowing the abyss behind. And so she too rejoiced, her gaze upon her husband, her wide arms round him pressed as though forever. The ending. Odysseus is reunited with his father. Athena commands that peace prevail between Odysseus and the relatives of the slain suitors. Odysseus has regained his family and his kingdom.